A House committee votes to raise the cigarette tax. Tesla gets banned from Indiana and then not. That plus a Terre Haute casino and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending February 3rd, 2017.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, the House Public Health Committee voted to raise the cigarette tax and increase the legal smoking age.
House lawmakers voted last session to raise the cigarette tax as part of their road funding bill. This session's measure, a standalone bill, would raise it even more than last year's by $1.50 up to nearly $2.50 a pack. It also increases the legal age to buy tobacco from 18 to 21 and removes employment protections for smokers. Bill author Republican Cindy Kirkhofer says the bill will help address the state's high smoking rates and improve Indiana's overall health. Some opponents say the tax hike would hurt convenience stores and other retailers because Indiana would lose a competitive advantage it currently enjoys over other states. The Health Committee approved the measure 11 to nothing.
Will Hoosier smokers see cigarette prices go up? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Katzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Mike O'Brien, which is more likely to happen this session, the cigarette tax hike or raising the smoking age?
I don't think Indiana's going to follow Hawaii and California being the third state to raise the age from 18 to 21. I think the cigarette tax will be in the mix to the end. I think it fits into a number of different proposals. There's a large public health advocacy group that's pushing for a cigarette tax increase. We're one of the lowest in the country. They want to make us one of the highest, put all that money into health care. The road funding bill last year included the cigarette tax as a component to that. I think it'll be in the mix till the end. I don't know if it'll pass or not. If it passes, I don't know what it'll be used for, but I think the likelihood that we're going to raise the smoking age here is pretty low.
Is that an unlikely possibility, raising the smoking age?
Yeah, I think it's more likely that the tax will go through. It's a good thing. Our smoking rates are way high, and they need to come down. And the health care impact of the smoking in Indiana is obvious. The question, as Mike points out, is where the money's going to go, and that's where the rubber hits the road in this. The advocates want it for cessation and prevention, and everybody else wants it for whatever their pet project might be. So we'll see where it goes.
John Katzenberger, I mentioned that, and Mike mentioned that this was part of the roads funding bill last year. They've taken it out of a standalone bill. That's still floating around in people's minds. What's the more compelling argument for lawmakers? Is it the public health aspect or this is how we help the roads funding formula work?
Well, I think it's the latter, unfortunately. I mean, the public policy question about using that to help stop smoking cessation programs, public health programs, makes more sense. But I do think that there is a lot of energy to use that money, or at least a part of that money. I think that's one of the reasons why it hangs around to the end, as Mike said. They could take a third or a half of that and generate some serious cash for the roads, which they're going to need if they're going to really fill that entire hole that's there.
The hole in the road or the hole in
both.
The funding?
The hole in the funding and the
and
hole
the
in the
roads. And the holes in the road.
That's right.
Yeah.
John Schwannis, with the likelihood of a gas tax seeming more and more likely, can lawmakers stomach raising two taxes this year?
There are some who probably would not want to do that. These are people, of course, who have taken the so-called no new tax pledge some years ago, more than a decade ago, and still feel some obligation to heed that. But I think that's certainly a minority. You also look at what taxes would affect what constituents. And the smoking community is an ever-shrinking community. So if you have a choice of raising a tax on everyone in the motoring public or on a relatively narrow segment demographic of the state of Indiana, it's a calculation. It's a mathematical equation. But for some who are purists on the subject of taxation and bad at all costs, that's going to still be a hurdle, you're correct, that they have to overcome.
It doesn't work. It doesn't work to do just the cigarette tax.
No, it doesn't. But that's why I think, though, I agree with what's been said. You'll get some money if it's enacted or passed, the cigarette tax, a substantial chunk of money for smoking cessation and other sorts of health-related measures. But if the calculations and the projections are right, there would be money left over for roads.
So if part of the argument here is this is part of the whole road funding discussion, if you move the sales tax on gas over entirely to roads, you have to fill that hole in the general fund, let's fill it with the cigarette tax increase. But that's a diminishing return already. If you raise it, it's probably going to diminish even faster. So what's the point in raising it?
Well, because I think you're trying to manage these things into a budget where you do take that sales tax on gasoline, which is the most substantial way you can dedicate more money to roads without raising taxes. But it's part of this larger package, right? But it leaves a big hole in the general fund that you have to go fill. And maybe, yeah, you're right. With the cigarette tax, it diminishes over time. But it doesn't diminish to zero next year. It diminishes gradually over time. And you can manage your way into the $1 billion a year road funding number that you need to hit. To maintain and build the roads that we need.
The easy way to do it is to cut the corporate tax cuts that they have keep coming for the next 4 or 5 years. Just stop shifting the burden from corporations to individuals in this state, and we'll have enough money for the roads.
I suspect we'll hear a little bit more about that next week, but time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question: should lawmakers raise the age to legally buy cigarettes from 18 to 21? A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question: will the women's march rallies across the country and the world have a significant impact on this nation's political future? 60% say yes, 20% say no, and another 20% say it's too early to tell. If you would like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. The House Roads Committee this week altered a bill banning auto manufacturers from selling their vehicles directly to customers.
Electric car manufacturer Tesla does not use dealerships. It sells directly to customers. And so the company and its customers objected to the bill that would have barred them from doing so within the next few years. Proponents of that bill say it's about consumer protection and ensuring balance in the marketplace. Still, bill author Republican Representative Ed Soliday drafted a compromise, an amendment that would allow Tesla specifically to continue selling in the state.
But at the same time, limit the ability to enter that market without demonstrating that a new manufacturer can actually perform at a standard that assures safety for our consumers.
The House Roads Committee adopted Soliday's change without objection before sending the legislation to the House floor. The Auto Dealers Association of Indiana, one of the bill's primary supporters, applaud the change.
Ann Delaney, is this a case of the legislative process working the way it's supposed to?
Well, clearly. I mean, it's working for the Republicans to protect the large dealerships who contribute so much money to Republican candidates. Isn't that the way it's supposed to work? I mean, the irony of the Republican Party of small government, too many regulations, stay out of business, encourage entrepreneurship. I can sell my house by myself, but I'm not allowed to buy a car by myself directly. I have to go through a dealer. I'm not competent to do that. I think I probably am. I think most people probably are. This is a way to restrict the markets, to keep them for the large dealerships at the expense of the consumer. It's indefensible, frankly, and it's done exactly the way they want it to be done. They want to protect their large contributors. That's what this is all about. It has nothing to do with good public policy.
When the Roads Committee passed the amended bill yesterday, the one no vote, Wes Culver, was because he's for free markets and he believes this constrains that. Is he right?
I think he is overall. I think to your original question, did the process work the way it should? I think it did. I mean, 24 hours before the vote took place in the House Roads Committee, overwhelmingly passed the bill out. I mean, you had two groups that were diametrically opposed to each other. 24 hours later, they were forced to the table, compromised, and no one was really cut out in this. Both were accommodated, and both continue to operate the way that they've operated. Now, the broader question, which will, I assume, will be revisited, it will have to be revisited one day, is if the auto industry was created today, you would never set up the way we sell cars now. You know, and that's really the ultimately the standard that you try to, like, keep in mind when you're taking these interests into account. But, you know, auto dealers are a substantial member of the community. It's not about political contributions. It's about the contribution they've made. And how do you balance that with the great innovation we've seen from Tesla and the markets, the products they're bringing to market? It's not just about cars. It's about energy. It's about batteries and solar energy and everything else that they're bringing. So I think this is a good outcome for right now, but, you know, it's a long process.
John Schwann, should I be able to buy a car on the Internet?
Well, certainly that seems to be the shift, that consumers should be armed in this, especially in the Internet age, with the wherewithal, the resources to be able to make their own transactions. I think that's where, generally speaking, things are heading. You look at Tesla. I think they operate or sell cars in a couple dozen states right now. And aside from Indiana, only four states have actually put up barriers to this, not surprisingly Michigan, where GM is, happened to be one of those. Now, that's the subject of federal litigation that was filed last fall.
Right.
And saying, now that was filed, let me be clear, by Tesla, complaining about what they viewed as protectionism by the state of Michigan. But once, if in fact a federal court says, yes, that's protectionism, I think even though Tesla happens to be okay, if you want to use that terminology, in Indiana, the next electric car maker or the next whatever buggy maker that wants to sell directly will be able to point to federal ruling if in fact that's the case. And the Federal Trade Commission actually last fall, in the wake of the filing of the suit, weighed in and called on the state of Michigan to rescind its law, which was enacted, I think, in 2014.
Is that, even if this bill gets passed and everybody right now is happy with it, is it going to stand for very long as soon as somebody else raises their hand?
With all the activity on the TPP and some of these other trade bills, you wonder. But the answer is no. There will be other car makers. There will be other electric cars. And we don't know what other kinds of innovations are not that far down the road. So this is a temporary fix. There's going to be a change. I understand the vested interest of the car dealers and the millions and millions of dollars that they've got, you know, in the dealerships. But I'm sure they can see the handwriting on the wall, and they're going to be transitioning, too. We're going to see a major change in the way cars are sold.
Same thing you've seen with clothing and all other commodities on the Internet. They can't stop it. They
it's
may
just
halt
a matter
it
of time.
Or may slow it down.
But is that a good thing?
It.
I mean,
it
you're
matter.
Talking about, but
it
you're talking
matter.
About a, buying a shirt is very different from buying a car.
Yeah, there's and not a lot just, more money involved.
Well, there's a, but that, there's a lot more money involved. Shouldn't there be some measure of, I can be able to go to a place with that car and address a problem with it?
Why is that different from selling a house? I mean, there's a lot more money involved in that, and you can do it without any interference or any in-between dealership. So I don't see where it's different. Many states are already buying them through the Internet. Not just Tesla, but through the Internet.
More than 20. But again, I think this is an example of why it's dangerous to be an ideological purist on either side of the spectrum, because it doesn't always work. You're for, let's say in this case, I'm against, speaking on behalf of these individuals, I'm against any kind of government regulation or intrusion until I'm actually not against government regulation and intrusion. And that comes up time and time again on both sides of the political aisle.
I don't know. I'm pretty consistent.
Terre Haute leaders made their case to a Senate committee this week in favor of a casino in the western Indiana city. Community leaders testified about the future of a bill that would put unused slot machines from the Rising Sun Casino in southeastern Indiana to a new facility in Terre Haute. Those who spoke included Mayor Duke Bennett, a city councilman, and law enforcement officials, all strongly backing the idea. Opponents of the bill say a new casino will decrease revenue and steal competition from existing casinos around the state. But those in favor of the measure say they believe a Terre Haute casino will also draw in revenue from casino goers coming from Illinois. Legislative leaders, including Senate President Pro Tem David Long and Speaker Brian Bosma, are very skeptical of the bill's chances. John Katzenberger, will Indiana get a new casino in Terre Haute?
Nope.
Should I move on? Or?
Well, there really isn't much more to say. I mean, look, there are a lot of, I mean, I understand the desire of Rising Sun to, you know, use the machines that it can't use. I understand the desire of Terre Haute to be the host of those machines and benefit from the revenue from those. But also, again, we're talking about vested interests you got in the gaming industry in the state. I think that you've got a speaker and a pro tem who are, you know, lukewarm at best. There's no chance that the Terre Haute will have a casino.
At a time, though, when we're talking about revenues and how do we get money for all the things we want, Wouldn't the idea of moving some of those seats, perhaps drawing in a bunch of folks from Illinois that wouldn't otherwise come into the state for any reason, isn't that a way to raise revenue?
Well, that is the carrot. You hit it right on the head with the notion of Illinois, because Illinois' General Assembly is looking at, I think, clearing the path for six new casinos, right, one of which would be in Danville, Illinois, not too terribly far from the Indiana border. And as was noted, I believe, during the hearing on this bill, testimony in Illinois suggested, or about the market data and market research for that Danville casino suggested that 65% or so of the clientele and the resulting dollars for in Danville would come from Hoosiers. So that's an attention grabber, and you're exactly right, Brandon, that you can't take the gaming revenue now out of the Indiana budget and have anything close to a solvent state of Indiana. We've become dependent. So, but all of those arguments notwithstanding, I think John's still right. You have some people who just don't want to take that step right now.
When you're talking about, this is not just a brand new casino, this is moving machines, essentially, moving slots from one casino to a brand new one. What are the ripple effect, what kind of ripple effect would that have, if they did this, what kind of effect would that have across the entire gaming industry in this state?
It's a substantial change in policy in how we've done this before. So, I mean, in the past, you approved a license, you were able to build in a very kind of rigid way. You know, and it was very prescriptive where you could put the casino, and you couldn't just move capacity to another place. So from a policy standpoint, it's a substantial change in how we've always done this. Terre Haute's smart, though, I think, in that, one, they brought a pretty impressive coalition to the committee hearing. There were a lot of community leaders, a lot of community involvement.
Law enforcement officials, they
had a great community. I think there's a sense in Terre Haute that they need something there, whether it's renovation of some economic development downtown, bringing in a casino, a sales tax or a food and beverage tax to help renovate the Holman Center. I mean, there's a number of things that I think that the community is looking at to try to, like, spur development in Terre Haute. So they pulled this impressive coalition together. I think they're smart in the second way, in that we're going to have a broader discussion on gaming policy here. And so whether it's this capacity issue or you can kind of spread out your capacity into different physical locations, maybe that's part of it. Maybe it's not. Maybe they just approve another license and Terre Haute is kind of first in line, or Fort Wayne's, first in line. So I think they're smart to at least stake out their interest, and they've got a pretty good coalition behind them.
The number of casinos in the state is in the double digits. Should lawmakers who opened those doors a while ago be so skittish now about opening them any further?
Well, you're assuming that the capacity and the revenue is infinite, and I don't think it is. I mean, a lot of people never go to these places, and there's no question that Terre Haute needs something. It needs a lot, okay? If it were not for Indiana State and Rose Holman, it would really be in trouble. But I don't think this is the answer. They've got to show a little bit more vision than this.
You know, gambling revenue, too, in the state is way down from what it was 10 years ago.
And will continue to be
down. And it's continuing to decline against what conventional wisdom used to be. So that's another reason why they need to tread carefully. I think Mike's right. I think you've got changes in policies coming, but they really have to be careful how they do that.
Yeah.
Legislation to expand the state's preschool program turned into a voucher debate this week.
A proposed bill approved by the House Education Committee would expand the state's pre-K program from 5 to 10 counties and lower the financial threshold to help more poor families send their 4-year-old children to a state-qualified preschool for free. But the bill also creates a new pathway for how families become eligible for the state's school voucher program for kids in kindergarten and beyond. Supporters of private school vouchers say it would just simplify the process for parents to remain at a private or religious school if that's where their kids already attend preschool as part of the pre-K program. But opponents say the provision offers another gateway for taxpayer funding to be diverted from traditional public schools.
John Schwannis, is this a bit of bad politics to put something so controversial like the voucher language into a measure that otherwise would have had likely strong bipartisan support?
Bad politics or genius politics, depending on your perspective. I mean, again, if you just look at it from a Machiavellian sense, if you're somebody who wants vouchers and an expansion of school choice, and you can open the door more broadly to that type of programming and that kind of funding, and do it through a bill that enjoys broad support on both sides of the aisle, as certainly an expansion of Indiana's pre-K pilot program would, What's not to like? Again, if that's your perspective, it's not the purest form. It's not what we all studied probably in civics class in high school in terms of how bills become law.
Why don't you just call it what it is? It was a dirty trick.
It wasn't a dirty trick. This was a dirty trick.
If it works for you and that's your position,
okay, so
then
dirty
it's a
tricks are fine.
Then it's a genius
okay,
trick.
Okay, great.
I'm stating the reality. That's all.
No, you're avoiding stating the reality.
John Katzenberger, is there any chance that this could derail in any way the pre-K bill?
No, I don't think so. I think there's too much momentum, as John said. I think that there is a lot of appetite for even more than what has been called for to this point. So I don't think they'll derail the bill for that purpose this year.
And Delaney, what Mike talked about, the idea that this really does make it easier. It doesn't really expand the voucher program, does it?
Yes, it does. It opens it to 150% of poverty. And if you qualify for the preschool program, you're automatically qualified from K through 12 for vouchers. So, yes, it does expand the preschool program. It takes $10 million more from public education and puts it into the hands of private and parochial schools, which I think, and particularly in the parochial school attitude, I think is unconstitutional. We are directly supporting churches when we're doing this, and I don't think that's proper.
I know what the Supreme Court said,
and I think the Supreme Court is wrong in this regard. I think we are putting the money in the hands of schools that are controlled by churches, and I think that's against Indiana and the federal Constitution. And that $10 million more could have much more effectively spent on expanding the preschool by twice the amount.
I want to ask again about its impact on the pre-K bill, though, because arguably, of the four caucuses, the hardest sell about expanding the pre-K program is in the Senate Republican caucus. And the Senate Republican caucus is also the most reticent, well, not more than the Democrats, but of the two Republican caucuses, more reticent to expand the voucher program much further. So is putting this in the pre-K program just setting you up for more trouble when it gets over to the other side of the bill?
I think the policy change is that it's simplified the process for parents. So if you like your school, you can keep it. If you get out of pre-K, you don't get kicked out of the system and forced to reapply. If you like your school, you can go from pre-K to kindergarten and stay in the voucher program as long as you meet the income thresholds and the other standards of that program. I think the politics of this.
I don't think you have to qualify again. I don't
think
you have to continue to make those.
I think that's what Cena said.
Yeah, that's the change.
Excuse me?
That's the change.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
You would no longer.
So if you hit the jackpot with the lottery or the casino or something
else.
You'd still be in. Yes.
That's the change it would make.
Yes.
You wouldn't essentially have to. I mean, it just eases the process.
That's right. It allows you to stay in school. It allows you, if you're in a school that's working for you, you don't rotate out of it at the end of pre-K like you would currently.
Well, nobody's making you rotate out of it, but if you're in a position to pay for it instead of having the state pay for it, shouldn't you do that?
Your question about which caucus is more, what does this do to the Senate Republicans? I think right now there's a lot of focus on what does the process look like. Are five more counties coming in? Is it just community-based? Is it not the five counties that are in the law? They're looking at all the structure of the program right now, and not the dollars that are going, and that'll come later. So I think it gets easier right now.
Democratic U.S. Senator Joe Donnelly has his first Republican challenger.
Mark Hurt, a Kokomo attorney, says his concerns about Donnelly's voting record prompted him to throw his hat in the ring. Hurt says he was disappointed in Donnelly's votes on the Iranian nuclear agreement and the Affordable Care Act. Hurt says he supports President Donald Trump's immigration order and sees it as a cool-off period. Donnelly has vocally opposed that order and participated in a protest against it this week at the Indianapolis airport. Republican Hurt served as former U.S. Senator Dan Coats' senior policy analyst and legislative assistant and is now a part-time deputy prosecutor.
Mike O'Brien, will Mark Hurt make an impact in Donnelly's 2018 re-election bid?
I think there'll be a number of candidates in this primary. Mark Hurt's a nice guy. I think it's going to take a really seasoned candidate. It looks like Luke Messer has got a big boost this week. And so I'd look for a candidate like Messer to step in or Rakita.
Would a real competitive Republican primary help or hurt Joe Donnelly?
Is that a trick question?
It's not a trick question.
Of course it would help him. I mean, anything like that would help him, certainly. But, Joe Donnelly has done such an outstanding job as the junior senator from Indiana, now the senior senator from Indiana, that I think that he's going to be reelected handily. I think people really appreciate the steps he's taken, particularly on veterans affairs and other issues like that. And I think he's going to be reelected.
I think the Supreme Court decision is a big one for him.
It is. Finally, it's the big game this weekend in Houston between the Atlanta Falcons and New England Patriots. While I'm pretty sure I know who most of Indiana wants to win, who do you think will win, Mike O'Brien?
I think the Falcons are going to win, and I don't hate the Patriots. I just think the Falcons are a great team.
I don't care.
I think the Falcons are going to win, and I do hate the Patriots.
John Schwannis?
I'll echo that. Let's go with the Falcons.
There you go.
Hard to pick against the Patriots, but my heart wants the Falcons to win. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.